Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Can't believe we're already closing out February, our last segment of Franchise Today for February, and leading into the hot month of March and April and May on Franchise Today. And joining me today is Joe Caruso, my co-producer. Joe, how are things in Maryland?
Maryland, we are hot in Maryland. We're going to be 66 degrees in February, which is an event to be celebrated around where I live. But it's a pretty darn nice day.
Well, certainly things are hot in Maryland, as the IFA is corporate offices are right there in Washington. In Maryland. And last week we had IFA President and CEO Steve Caldera as our guest, and another record show for listenership. And I'm sure a lot of people will be downloading that on command as we move forward. And just a reminder that all segments of Franchise Today are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Joe, what was some of your thoughts about Steve's guest appearance on Franchise Today?
I think that we could have done a three-hour show. We had so many topics that are important to franchising, the franchise community, franchise development, lending. We could have done it triple the amount of time that we spent with Steve. It was a fantastic show. It just gave an inside view of what the IFA is doing for franchising, especially on those things that are of extreme importance to franchising, access to credit, the certainty in our tax policy and tax laws, all the things that are important to generate business, both for franchisors and franchisees alike. I mean, they're doing a terrific job at the IFA, and Steve and his team are to be commended.
Yeah, definitely, and I've been seeing a bunch of news releases coming out. As a matter of fact, another one from the IFA this morning about eliminating overtime exemption for companion care workers would harm seniors, small business owners, and workers. And if you're not on their news feed, certainly you need to be, because they've got all kinds of information coming out, and they really do a great job. And certainly the convention, definitely they outdid themselves this year. And we have Nancy Weingartner in just a few minutes is going to be on. And, of course, she's the executive editor at Franchise Times. And I believe this will be her third appearance on Franchise Today, so certainly we appreciate her taking time out of her busy schedule to be on here again and give us some of her insight and perspective on the IFA convention, as well as some insight into her recent trade missions. And we'll have her on here in just a few moments. Joe, we're leading into, as I said at the top of the show, a very busy time for Franchise Today, March, April, and May. Give us a little bit of insight as to what our listeners can expect as we head into what seems like so far off the summer, but when we start looking at the Franchise Today schedule, certainly it's not that far off.
Paul, I think it's amazing, and I've never been able to say this about Franchise Today, that we are booked through June. We have such a demand for guests to reprise their visits in previous episodes, and new people that want to be on the show. But we've got Lonnie Helgerson. He'll be on the show for the very first time, talking about the military and franchising in Betfran. We've got a new guest, Catherine Monson from Fast Signs. She's going to be talking about international franchising with the advent of their launch in Puerto Rico. We've got an encore performance of Bob Coleman on SBA lending, leading right into Ron Feldman from Franchise Finance America to talk about franchise financing. Then Brad Fishman will be doing a recap of the Franchise Unconference, which I think is going to happen in Salt Lake again this year. We'll be going into the Small Business Lending Summit with a show. And then we hit our legal series from April 12th through the end of May, and it'll be a seven-part series with the best legal minds in franchising talking about what's important to franchisors in terms of compliance and what's new on the regulatory front that franchisors need to take into account for their businesses.
Yeah, the franchise legal series is really going to be interesting. We're going to have some repeat topics because we can never quite finish talking about, you know, social media and franchising, e-discovery, legal issues, et cetera, as well as franchise sales best practices. And this year, though, I am really happy to announce that we'll also have a segment on private equity and franchising, which I'm really looking forward to. And also, as you said, you know, Brad Fishman will be giving us a recap of the unconference, and I'm going to lead right into introducing Nancy Weingartner, executive editor at Franchise Times, and I believe, and if I'm not mistaken, Nancy attended last year's Franchise Unconference and didn't ski, so maybe we get some perspective on that. Nancy, welcome again to Franchise Today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the invitation.
Now, was I correct in saying that you were at Franchise Unconference last year and you hung around the fire pit?
I did. I did do one half day of snowmobiling. And
okay.
I am going back this year, so I'm debating about whether I should try skiing or not. Just kind of picture hitting a tree. I just think I'm that type of person, so...
Well, I'll tell you, when you hear so much about what John Carlston at Process Peak does with snowboarding and surfing and everything else, and as athletic as he is, to see the pictures of his ankle on one of the last days of the conference or the unconference was really scary.
That you just convinced me. It's fire time again for me.
Fire time, bring out the s'mores, bring out the Cabernet, and relax by the fire, and I'm sure it's going to be a good time up in Utah this year. Nancy, as you know, we just came out of the IFA convention, and as we were saying, leading into the show, it seems like so long ago, and yet it was just a little bit more than a week ago. Give us some of your insight into this year's IFA convention and maybe also a little bit of perspective at how this was different than, you know, even just the last couple of IFA conventions.
Well, I think IFA has that wonderful problem that it's getting so big that I remember years ago and even before my time, it was a small gathering. Now it's so many people you have trouble seeing everybody that you want to talk to. And the content was especially good this year. And unfortunately, I spent a lot of time in the hall talking to people, but I did go to some of the international track, and it was against things that I really wanted to see, the new markets where they were talking about getting professional athletes involved. They had a finance track, and they also had technology where they were talking about Facebook and Twitter. And so a lot of content that they're trying to squeeze into fewer days, because with the committee meetings, there's just so much going on all the time that it's really getting hard to pick what you want to go to. And they had the leadership conference that I only got to see a little bit of, but once again, good content. People are sharing, and that's the one thing I always hear, that even when you're in the same business, like you can be in restaurants, and people will still share best practices, they'll still give you contacts and information, and that's why I think we all like being a part of the franchise community so much, is that it's just a very generous, giving, informative community.
Well, certainly walking into the exhibit hall this year, I felt for the first time in a long time that I didn't know a lot of the people there. And it seemed like there was probably another 500 people that were added to the convention ranks often for the first time. And I know the IFA ambassadors for new meetings, I know they said that their reception was overflowing out into the hallway, and that was really good to see. And I know the membership committee has worked hard at getting new members. And of course, basically that comes down to, you know, earning the right really to get new members. And as you said, putting out a lot of great content, a lot of sharing going on at the IFA, I think really makes it a one of the leading events in franchising, and one certainly I'm looking forward to again next year as we get back to Las Vegas. The one complaint I have is that, God, we need to do something about wireless at the events. I know they want us to tweet and post and share and communicate, and the wireless access isn't always the greatest, especially if you have an AT&T phone like I do.
I noticed
you spent some time walking around the exhibit hall, and specifically I saw you over at E.H. Anderson PR's booth. Give us a little insight into what was going on in this public relations firm's booth on the exhibit hall.
Well, that was really kind of fun. We did a little bit of a partnership with the Andersons, and Beige Anderson used to work as a photographer in television, and so he set up the camera, and I did some introductions. Steve Caldera, Mary Ann O'Connell talked about women in franchising, Mary Thompson talked about VetFran, so it was just kind of fun. I think in my column I wrote down that I don't have a face for radio. I think I have hands for journalists. Looking at myself doing those introductions, I know why I'm not on television. But it was kind of fun and very short, thank goodness. And then we had a lot of good content. We were looking for people to break some news, and we had a
right.
Tell us some new things. And Liz Anderson did a lot of the helping recruit, and their booth looked great. And so we have all those videos up on our website, on Franchise Times website. I think they're also on YouTube also. But those are kind of fun. They're real short, and just to kind of go in and hear a little bit of what was going on. Another one on technology and Facebook, and so good things.
Well, Liz and Bae certainly are good people. I've communicated with Liz quite a bit on Twitter and Facebook, and it certainly was great to meet them for the first time in person. Also, I noticed at the exhibit hall a lot of new service providers, seems like more marketing people than ever before, several new PR firms, some bigger and better booths. Really, really interesting to see the new enthusiasm or the reinvigoration of feelings, certainly a lot different than I thought they were 2 years ago in San Antonio when things were kind of down a little bit. I know I ran into Doc Cohen as we were leaving Orlando. We happened to be on the same flight. And of course, you know, Doc travels hundreds of thousands of miles a year for IFA events and always looking at ways to make it better. And I know he's shaking his head and saying, God, you know, we could have used an extra day on the front end and an extra day on the back end just to get everything in. And I think he's spot on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you have all of the events, the different cocktail receptions and the dinners that are being hosted by different groups. And I think anytime you have new people joining, I think it's a really good sign for an association and hopefully for the economy. I know a lot of groups always are struggling to get, you know, younger members involved, and I think the IFA is doing a good job of attracting people from the industry, making it seem that they need to be a part of the IFA if they want to be in franchising, and I think it's paying off. I think, like you say, you see that enthusiasm and that new ideas and new services, which everybody wants to find the latest and greatest. So I think that the Expo did a really good job of getting all that out there.
Well, certainly the last year within franchising from the IFA's perspective hasn't been the easiest. I know Steve Caldera and company have been up to Capitol Hill quite a bit. They've been in the media, I think, more than the IFA has in the past. And certainly Steve Caldera, and of course, exiting chairman of the IFA, Jack Earl just did a wonderful job this year, and certainly looking for great things for the new chairman, John Luther. I don't know much about John, except I did serve on the convention committee with him. Appears to be a good leader. Do you have some perspective to share on John?
Well, I actually got to sit down and talk to him in his office a few years ago at Duncan headquarters, and I really like him. He's very, very smart, very savvy, knows a lot about the industry, and I think he will be a good leader. He's somebody that's going to be a good interview for people, someone who I think really represents the industry well. So I think he's going to be a nice follow-up. Because Jack did do a great job, and I think it's going to be nice to have the franchisee followed by somebody that's the corporate side of it, just so you constantly have kind of a changing viewpoint up there. And because the staff work so hard at moving their plan forward, they always say that the chairman's not going to come in and throw a big wrench into things or have a new agenda. But I think it's nice to have a face of franchising for a year that represents both franchisees, and then to have somebody representing franchisors.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I know a little bit about John. I've been around him a bit. I love his charisma. I love the fact that, to me, he brings another perspective to the chairman's role, and I think that perspective was gained by me and also our co-producer, Joe Caruso, as we were invited last year by Steve Caldera to the Small Business Lending Summit. And I recall at one point John kind of getting a little bit upset with the bankers, not afraid to speak his mind and certainly not afraid to volley back some of the responsibility in the whole lending mess. Joe, do you remember any of the specifics from that? I remember John was sitting on the left-hand side of the room as this was occurring. Do you remember, recall any specifics from that?
Yeah, I think the person on the dais, and I can't remember what bank they were from, was kind of making an indictment against franchisors that they weren't proactive enough and they weren't giving enough information to the banks in order for them to make loans. And John Luther took umbrage with that commentary. And the bank was more specific about that, but John made it very, very clear that you know, the franchising is highly regulated. I mean, we already have franchise disclosure documents. A lot of franchisors are using bank credit reports, and the bankers aren't just asking for what they need. And I think the good thing about that exchange is it moved the conversation towards streamlining the process. And one of the things that came out of the Small Business Lending Summit that we're going to learn at this year's Small Business Lending Summit is that they've got some uniformity, some universality to the applications from various lenders, which is going to make it easier for borrowers to be able to shop their loans and easier for the lenders to review loans because they'll all be looking at the same type of information in the same format. So I think that it was a good exchange, and I think it was healthy, very, very healthy.
Yeah, I think it was healthy, and I really love the fact that he stood up for it. He made his point. He stood behind his convictions. And you're right. I think it was almost a turning point. And I love the fact, because you know as well as I do, a lot of people sat there. There was a lot going on. It almost felt like we were at some Senate hearings at times. And I know I was kind of losing interest as it just kept going on and on. And it was nice to know that, you know, people definitely were listening and standing up for what they believe in. And this year's Small Business Lending Summit is April 17th in Washington, D.C. We'll be getting out some more specific information as to the venue as we know it. But I know I talked with Matt Howler over at the IFA, and we will have on the April 5th show a franchise today, somebody either from the summit committee or from the IFA that will talk about what to expect from the summit and kind of give us some insight leading into the second small business lending summit, which I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more about. You know, Nancy, a lot of things, as we said, going on in franchising. And I know with Franchise Times, you have a conference coming up in March. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's the Franchise Times Franchise Finance Conference. And as you just mentioned, financing is kind of what is on everybody's mind right now in franchising. And so it's March 6th through 7th at the Encore at Wynn in Las Vegas. And we still are accepting registrations if anybody wants to, any of your listeners want to sign up. But the nice thing about it is it's a smaller conference than our restaurant one in the fall. So people have a chance to really get to know the lenders, get to know a lot of the other franchise companies that are there, and talk financing. What I'm finding that's really interesting is franchisors are coming up with some creative ideas to help franchisees out, whether it's, you know, helping with the financing, it's whether they're walking them to the bank and helping them with their applications. And I think the conference is a great way of getting that information out there. Marco's Pizza is one of the companies that really are coming up with a lot of innovative ideas, and Ken Switzer's on the panel again. And so it's talking a little bit about the future of where things are going. We've got Bob Coleman from the Coleman Report. Ron Feldman, who's one of your guests, is going to be on a panel talking also.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to Ron and all he has to bring to the table. I think that'll be our third segment with Ron as well, and certainly look forward to hearing more about your conference. And then also, Franchise Times every year has their Legal Eagle announcements coming out. Can you give us a little bit of perspective on that?
We just finalized the list, and we're getting ready. It's coming out in the April issue. So we finished the March issue. It's now officially being printed. So we're turning our attention to the Legal Eagles. And I'm really excited that it's come a long way. In the beginning, I don't know if people thought that it wasn't going to come, you know, last, and so we weren't really seeing it on resumes. Now we're seeing people, the attorneys who are on the list, putting it on their resume, and they should be proud of it because it's not only their peers that are nominating them, but we've got a group at Franchise Times that looks over who's kind of the movers and shakers, who's doing the different events and the speakers at the ABA and the IFA Legal Convention, who's really that go-to person in the franchise community. And the problem is there's so many good lawyers out there. And a lot of times they're not moving off the list, and so a lot of the people we'd like to move on are going to have to wait another year. But there's a lot of excitement about that. And we even have a gift for our Legal Eagles this year. So hopefully you'll be seeing some Legal Eagles after April walking around with some wings on their lapel.
Well, that's neat. Yeah, I know there are so many great legal minds in franchising. I know Joe and I always have a difficult time as this year's our third annual franchise legal series, and always comes on the heels of Franchise Times announcements of the franchise Legal Eagles. And you know, we have seven segments this year. We had seven last year. We started out with four the year before. And, God, I mean, we could easily have 20 segments with as many bright minds and hot topics in the legal aspect of franchising. So, yeah, the legal community is really great. And the end of our legal series, the last week or the week before Memorial Day weekend, will be a IFA Legal Symposium recap. So if you don't have an opportunity to go to the Legal Symposium, certainly you can listen to Franchise Today and get some insight and perspective from somebody that one of the attorneys that attended the event. And we're confirming that right now. Franchise Times. I see now we have a digital version. Can you give us a little bit of share a little thoughts on that, and then we'll lead into a discussion about the trade missions.
Well, I think like most publications, we're always debating about how much content to put on the web versus, you know, if we still want them to read the magazine. So we have a digital edition that we have up there, but we're in the process of revamping our website, which I'm really excited about because that means we're going to have an opportunity to have live, not live videos, but we'll have more videos up there. I'll be able to blog once a week, two times a week, get more international news up there, and just make the site a little bit more responsive. Right now, it's pretty much just posting what we've had on the web and putting our conferences up there. So we're really excited about getting a little bit more interactive on the website. And we're doing a lot more with international, too, so the website is the place to be for that, too, because obviously it's going to be expensive to mail magazines all over the world. So
sure,
that will also
sure,
be something
absolutely. So you said you're going to be blogging now another day or two a week, another once or twice a week, adding that to your already busy schedule. I guess you'll be pounding out a lot of articles on a plane, right?
Probably so. I'll need that Wi-Fi that you were talking about, how valuable that is.
Yeah, there you go. Well, this is Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto. My guest today is Nancy Weingartner, the executive editor at Franchise Times. We just finished talking about the IFA convention, and Nancy shared some of her insight and perspective. And Nancy, you've been very involved on the international front. Last year, you went to India, and then towards the end of the year, Vietnam and Indonesia with some franchise trade missions. I definitely don't think we have enough time in a day to probably touch on everything, but we're going to give it a shot over the next 20 or 25 minutes on the show. But how did this all come about? Let's start from the beginning.
Well, I met Kristen Houston, who is the franchise lead at an IFA convention, and we started talking about the trade missions. And in the past, they had done them with IFA, and they had kind of stopped doing them. And so she asked if we would be interested, because I had gone on the India one. And so I went to just kind of scope it out with her in India and thought that it was just the greatest way to observe both the country and the franchising professionals, because the people who are going all know what they're doing internationally, but the U.S. Commercial Service will introduce them to the people in the countries. And so it's almost like having a matchmaking service so that you can do all the homework that you want to do on the country, but once you're there, you meet a lot of the leaders, the ministers. We had receptions at the embassy. And so through that trade mission, we started talking about Franchise Times being one of the sponsors. And so when they brought up the Vietnam and Indonesian one, Franchise Times signed on to be one of the co-sponsors, and then the International Franchise Association joined us. So the three groups more or less kind of share the responsibilities. Of course, the U.S. Commercial Service really does all the work. They are the ones who plan out the itinerary, where we're going to be, how we're going to make it, the flights in between. And IFA did a lot of the registration and the work on the website of getting the information to people. We did the booklet. We did some advertising. We always do stories on it. So it was a really nice partnership between the three groups. And we had a lot of the same people go on the Indonesian-Vietnam trade mission that went on the Indian one. So that was what was really kind of fun. You began to have like this little community, and you could see them relax at night and share information. And even though some of them were in the same business, what I thought was interesting is they would say, well, you know, I talked to this prospect, and I don't think they're really right for me, but maybe they would be for you. So there's a lot of that camaraderie that's on the road. And Beth from the IFA did just a wonderful job of talking to the media, and she was kind of the spokesperson for us. Scott Lear was also there. And it's just, like I said, a wonderful opportunity to really get to know the country. A lot of times when you're a tourist, you kind of just see the things that tourists see. This way you get to go into the shopping centers and the malls. You get to meet the real estate people who are the experts. And then, like I say, there's nothing more exciting than going to a reception at an ambassador's home and meeting the local people there.
What was the what's the primary objective on going on these trade missions?
It's twofold. Basically, the companies want to go to meet area developers or contacts over there to begin to open units. But a lot of it is just doing the due diligence. It's seeing the country, seeing the culture, seeing if your company is going to be a fit. We did a lot of looking at the competitors. So when we went into the malls, rather than just kind of walking around, a number of them would go in and taste the Kentucky Fried Chicken to see what the product was like, taking a lot of pictures of the layout, how much space they had, where they were positioned, what was around them. So you're doing that due diligence. You're seeing the quality of the candidates, too, to see whether or not you're going to find people who have the income and the skill level that you need. A lot of times when you go to these foreign countries, they may have the money, but they may not have the infrastructure, they may not have the setup or the knowledge of what you're doing. And so, again, you have to be very wary of that. So meeting a number of people in 1 or 2 days begins to give you an idea of what the candidates are going to look like there and whether your product's going to be acceptable. When we were in India, there were several hamburger chains that were on the mission, and obviously you're not going to be – well, some restaurants actually do serve beef there, but for the most part, that is excluding a large portion of people. So you need to look and see whether or not your product could be adapted. You know, you would offer maybe more chicken, vegetarian options, and to see whether or not that is an option. So it's a fairly inexpensive way, rather than going on your own and having to, you know, pay a lot of the contacts over there. They do all the advertising to get the candidates to come in and actually meet you. They set up the meetings. And because all the meetings are in one place, you're not running all over the city to meet people at different buildings, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but in Indonesia, we were in Jakarta, the capital city. We actually had to have a police escort so that we could make it to the mall on time for the meetings. The traffic is just so bad. So, again, it's a way to introduce your concept to the country and like I say, to really see whether or not you want to be there, if you're a fit.
Well, certainly. I mean, just, you know, talking about India, talking about Vietnam, and talking about Indonesia, I can't think of three countries that are so different than U.S. and Canadian countries where most franchisors have a presence. I mean, beyond the culture gap, like you said, you know, the crowds, the crowded streets, the traffic, the different food, the different, you know, the culture, the different way that people look at employment, that look at business ownership, it seems so overwhelming.
It really is, and I think that was the comment I made when I went the first time to India, that I was amazed going there that anybody would want to continue to step two, because it does seem so overwhelming. There's so many adjustments that you have to make. And in India, the supply chain was already pretty much established because they had some franchises that had already been in there. In Vietnam, not so much. There's not a lot of franchises there. KFC is very big in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
And in Vietnam, the population there likes the bone-in chicken. And so they may be serving a side of rice, though. And McDonald's in Indonesia was serving a lot of chicken. And when we were walking through, I think it was Carl's Jr., who was advertising a side of rice to go with your hamburger. So.
Well.
There is a lot of different adjustments that you have to make. You know, the flavors can be so different. There's the local franchises. And that's the other thing that's really interesting. We went to one very large chain that's a franchise there that is, I'm probably going to say it wrong, it's Pho, which is like their noodle soup. And we went to a very large restaurant. We were eating soup. It was delicious, you know, very nice accommodations. And some of the people went to look at the kitchen and noticed that there really wasn't a refrigerator. They were refrigerating things in coolers. So, again, it's just the difference. You have to make sure your product will be something that will be, you know, safe there, because one of the great stories is the in Vietnam, the woman who worked for the embassy that was walking around with us was saying that when the Asian flu, the bird flu, hit Vietnam, that a lot of people wanted to go to KFC because they believed that the food would be safe there because it was American standards. And so that's really a compliment for America and for our franchises, that they believe that the all of the procedures and processes that we have in place would make the chicken safe to eat there, where maybe it wouldn't be on the street or at a local restaurant. So a lot of that work has to be done before. So for some companies going on the trade mission, they'd already done a lot of the legwork, and so they were looking for a partner. Other ones were just kind of starting the process and looking to see whether or not it would be a fit. And the what they call middle class and what we call middle class would be so different, too. They're talking about having extra discretionary income that might be $3,000 a year, and that's just beyond your basic needs. So the pricing of the products has to be different. You're not going to get as many visits, and so you've got to be able to offer something unique. And a lot of times that America, U.S. product is something that's unique enough to have people want to spend that little bit of extra money they have on it.
Well, Joe, I know you have spent quite some time in the food service industry segment of franchising, and I know we probably have a lot of young startup franchisors that listen to Franchise Today that are gleaming and beaming at the possibilities of being international. From a franchisor's perspective, can you share some of your perspective that might snap some of them back to reality?
It's always going to cost you more than you think it will. The ability to do even simple things like background checks on an international landscape is sometimes almost impossible. And being able to vet your franchisees before you sign a deal with them, it is really challenging. When I worked at Dietrich Coffee and Gloria Jean's, all of the international reported to me, both sales and development and operations. And every country was different. The idea that it's going to be one size fits all, you can put that out of your mind. You're going to be customizing everything you do, and you're going to be reinventing your brand almost in each country that you go to. Now, those countries that are culturally the same as other countries, well, there's going to be some commonality there. Australia was certainly a lot easier to develop Gloria Jean's in than Qatar. So it is challenging. You better have a big budget, and you better be very, very selective on who you pick. And it can be challenging. It's not a bed of roses.
Probably a good idea to hang out with Nancy on future trade missions for sure. Nancy, we always see, in the movies, you see KFC in Asia, you see of course the golden arches of McDonald's, and of course everything seems to be food. Were there any discussions about or any people that traveled with you on the trade mission that were non-food service?
Well, on this particular one, we had Crescom, which was a management company, and they had some interest because a lot of, in Vietnam especially, they're looking to work with, to move people up into that management. And they were saying that their management principles are pretty much something that flows through all different cultures. So it's just basic good management. So that was really the only one that went on the trade mission this time. And I believe, we had a vitamin one too, which I guess was a little bit different than And vitamins now is interesting, was something that in Vietnam and Indonesia now, where they're beginning to move more into the middle class, they're looking more at healthy eating and taking vitamins, taking care of themselves. Fitness was something that they were saying gyms would be welcome there, something that was starting to open up. Child care and also child education. Asian cultures really are devoted to their children. I'd like to think all cultures are, but they were saying particularly there. And so a lot of times if they didn't feel the schools were strong enough, they were looking for these extra educational programs for children. So I think, again, there's lots of opportunity there, but it's also checking it all out, making sure that you've got, as Joe was saying, there's just so many moving parts that you have to really be sure that everything is covered. And they always talk about how it's...
Yeah, I read the article that you have in Franchise Times regarding the trade mission, and it was interesting that you pointed out that franchisors were warned their offering needed some type of experience attached to it. And as you, as I'm quoting you, such as the live music for the Hard Rock Cafe or singing waiters at Johnny Rockets. What did you see out there? Why is it so important, and is it the norm, or do you just stand out if you do that?
Well, the norm, I think a lot of times just the fact of going to an American brand that they see on television is sort of that experience. But okay. I think what they're looking for is they, when they go to a mall, they're not just going to run in and pick up, you know, a skirt and blouse and run home. They may spend all day there. It's air conditioned. There's, you know, lots of wandering around to do and seeing things. And so if your food concept has a little bit of entertainment in it, I think you're more apt to want that, the people will want to stay. So for Johnny Rockets, it was a natural fit because it's got that 50s look to it, the hamburgers and milkshakes. The servers come out and they kind of sing and dance a little bit. We actually went to the Hard Rock Cafe, and that was really interesting to see a local group get up and sing all rock and roll songs and the lights flashing. And again, it's just that element of having something going on, some kind of excitement. It could be, you know, a fountain stand, because that's different. And both of those countries, they tend to drink drinks that are in bottles because they want that safety of opening it and knowing that it's, you know, hasn't been refilled. So it's just, I think, again, a new product could be the entertainment value. With coffee, a lot of times I heard they would buy like a Starbucks or something and carry the cup around all day. It became kind of a status symbol. And they probably would refill it from another coffee pot. But again, it's that experience. It's being able to say, oh, yes, you know, I went to McDonald's, or, you know, I'm taking these vitamins from, you know, vitamin shops. So I think it's all about creating that American experience. And the thing that made me kind of sad is that we're being judged by the rest of the world on our television. And I'm not sure we've got we're shown to our best advantage in any of the shows that I've been seeing lately on television.
Yeah, I don't know if the people in Vietnam or Indonesia would take too kindly to Jersey Shore. I think that's another story for another day, and I guess we can't convince you to sing a Johnny Rockets song on the air, so I won't even go there. You mentioned in your article, too, about coffee, and I was really surprised. You said that, you know, coffee's another favorite among the Vietnamese. And Joe, you had mentioned you were with Gloria Jean's, and Nancy mentioned that that's already in the coffee market there. I always think of the Asian communities as being tea-driven. Now, is coffee something that is specific just to breakfast, or is it something that you saw throughout the day?
Throughout the day. I think, again, it's that ability to go and sit down in one of these coffee places and, you know, talk and mingle, and groups will meet there. And so I think it's become kind of that cultural thing where they want to experience coffee as more than just a beverage to wake you up. It's becoming sort of that experience.
You know, Paul, coffee in Vietnam is a very interesting phenomena because from a standing start just a few years ago till today, Vietnam is the third largest coffee producer in the world.
And they
virtually had no coffee industry. Certainly during the war years, they probably weren't doing much more than rice.
Right.
Joe, you mentioned obviously a couple of the downsides to the market. Nancy, you referred to several of them in your article. One about labor. Another was about local banks running out of U.S. dollars to pay the franchisor royalties. Land being owned by the government and rents being high, and of course, electricity being a significant percentage of overhead. And then, of course, you know, as Joe said, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all. And as we talked about, you know, there are different cultures. And I thought it interesting you pointed out that no doesn't always mean no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that very polite culture where they don't want to disappoint you. And so that's what I find fascinating is how much you really do need to know about negotiations and about talking to people. In Vietnam, there was a huge bartering, but you would go and you would never pay the price. So I guess it is bartering. You're always trying to get the price down a little bit lower. And so you have to be very conscious about that in a business deal also, that like you say, if they say no and you're coming back with another offer, it's not all about money. You know, it's about getting to know the people and the experience. And again, that was the other thing that I thought was the big takeaway, is that you can't just show up, meet people, shake their hands, and the deal is done. It's getting to know them both as people, what their culture is like, seeing them run their operation, something going. And a lot of these franchisees that they're looking at do have large companies with lots of other franchises in them or other industries that they're doing. And so they do have that infrastructure. But once again, then you have to worry about, are you going to be just a small little piece of a big company that they may not
be able to do? I was surprised to see that Indonesia has over 400 franchise companies. Not surprised to see that, you know, Vietnam only had 70. Unlike the U.S., where we do have a very diverse population and culture and a lot of religious backgrounds, how much does religion play into the equation in places like Indonesia and Vietnam when it comes to, you know, franchise operations?
Well, actually, in Indonesia, because it is such a large Muslim population, there isn't a lot of alcohol being sold. And so for a concept like Applebee's, which was on the trade mission with us, that may not be, you know, if you're making a lot of your profits from alcohol sales, which I'm not saying they do, that would not be a good fit, obviously, to go there.
Mm-hmm.
The people that I talked to there said that they are very they're a different kind of a Muslim population. They're not extremists. They're very much welcoming to the United States. And so I think that would also play. In Vietnam is very high percentage of Buddhists. The interesting thing is we were there right before Christmas, and in both of those countries, Christmas trees, Christmas decorations were everywhere. They were in the hotels. They were on the streets, the malls. Almost more than we do in the United States, and that is a Christian holiday. And we were told that it's mainly because it's a shopping opportunity. But I think because of seeing things like that, I'm not sure that the religion would play a huge part in that. But it's all in respecting, you know, the workers, the customers, and their preferences, not doing anything that would offend them.
Of course, as we know, in franchising, the brand, the trademark, if you would, is king. And yet, in I could only imagine how some of the franchisors take to their brand names being shortened. Explain some of that.
Well, in Indonesia, that's what they were saying, is that they like to, like McDonald's became MacD. And I think, again, it's just like it's slang. And I don't think they mean it disrespectfully. I think it's just a short way of saying it. And it's almost like an affection. You know, it's they know it well enough. It's like a nickname. So I think they meant it in the very best term. So probably the franchisor wouldn't mind too much, because then it becomes that that friend they're going to see.
You know, I saw probably a lot of people in franchising saw the thing on CNBC about McDonald's in Asia and how they actually had to, quote-unquote, train customers going through the drive-through because, as depicted on the episode I'm referring to, the people would buy the food on the through the drive-through, park their car in the front, and then carry the food back into the front of the restaurant. And I imagine there's probably all kinds of stories like that coming out of these trade missions. Really interesting, really seems to be overwhelming, quite intriguing. One quick question, Coke or Pepsi?
I'm trying to remember, because I think it was predominantly Pepsi. I'm trying to remember, because I was surprised that there weren't both.
I saw that the one that was your the person that was your trade coordinator is actually named Pepsi, and her father named her after the drink, of course, over his wife's objections. And the funny thing is, I met somebody here from Indonesia, here in the Houston area, whose name is Pepsi. Very similar story. So it's interesting. I don't think, though, at least you could, maybe you could tell me, was anybody named McDonald?
No, not that I met.
Well,
I'm sure there would be
certainly very interesting. India followed by Indonesia and Vietnam. Any trade missions on the horizon?
Yes, and we've got two that Franchise Times is hopefully going to co-sponsor. It's coming up probably the end of summer. We're looking at maybe August to Colombia, Chile, and Panama. And again, what's really interesting about these is that you're working with maybe one or two people from the U.S., and then it's all the local staff that really know that area. So Latin America, and then we're looking at going to the Middle East a little bit later in the fall. So that would be Egypt, definitely, and then we're not sure what the other countries would be. But again, what is beautiful about the whole arrangement is all of those travel arrangements. I mean, you're paying for it and you're actually making the travel arrangements, but they're setting up the hotels where the meetings are going to be, where your rooms are. They're telling you the connecting flights to all the different countries. And you're spending a lot of time on buses and on planes. It's really a difficult trip for your body to go through. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's so fascinating that it makes it worthwhile. You're seeing something new and exciting. And like I said, the people on these trade missions are a fun group of people that you really kind of feel like you're on a vacation until all the work starts.
How long is the trade mission, one of the trade missions typically?
It usually will be around 6 days. And then, there'll be some travel time coming into it. But depending on the one that we just went to, we went to three different cities. So I think it ended up being maybe eight, nine days, I think, total.
Wow. And certainly the franchise All-Star Band doesn't come with you. So that might be
unfortunately.
in the cards of the future. It's interesting heading to Central and South America. I really do believe with the 2014 World Cup and the 2016 Summer Olympics in Brazil that franchising is really going to get quite a bit of exposure to me, just like it did in Vancouver after the Winter Olympics and Beijing after the Summer Olympics some years back. So I think your timing with that trade mission down there is definitely right. And certainly the Middle East, I mean, I see it all the time in LinkedIn, people from, you know, Egypt and other areas in the Middle East. And is there anything projected or planned in the future for a trade mission for some of the lesser-known European countries?
Not that I have heard of. I think in 2013 they're looking at, the U.S. Commercial Service is looking at China and Australia. But again, it's one of those things where if the demand is there, that there's a very good possibility. The U.S. Commercial Service also has something called gold keys, and that's when one company can go and pay a fee, and they get like this matchmaking service also. So you could go on your own and connect with them over there. The nice thing about going on the trade mission is, like I said, you have a number of people that are devoted to you. Plus, you get all the education around it. You know, you get to meet the local leaders. They've got receptions where the business leaders come into town. We met the Chamber of Commerce in one of the Vietnamese cities and the Young Entrepreneurs Group. So you're meeting a lot of business leaders as well as the prospects coming in. So your database is going to be expanding. And so if they don't turn out to be your partner, they may know someone who knows someone. And so you know someone in that country that could help you with information when you needed it.
Very, very interesting, Nancy, and I know we could talk all day about this. Look for Nancy's article, Trade Secrets. That was in the February edition of Franchise Times, a behind-the-scenes look at the Vietnam-Indonesia Franchise Trade Mission. And I know earlier last year was an article about the trade mission to India. Look forward to seeing more about Central and South America and certainly about the Middle East. Also, we have the upcoming Franchise Finance Conference at the Encore. What are the dates of that in March, Nancy?
That would be the 6th and 7th.
Okay, great. And that'll be at the Encore, right next door to the Wynn, quite a hotel, quite a venue. Nancy, I always look forward to having you on Franchise Today. Look forward to having you on again in the future, and certainly look into running into you at future franchise events, and we have quite a few of them, it seems like, on the calendar.
Right. Well, thank you both. I really appreciate it. It's always nice to talk. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nancy. Joe, another great segment of Franchise Today. I think very appropriate as we talk about international franchising today. And, of course, you have Catherine Monson coming on March 8th with Fast Signs, talking about some of their recent foray into international franchising down in Puerto Rico. A little bit of perspective from you, Joe, on talking about trade missions and international franchising, because I know you've been exposed to international franchising in your past history.
Well, I would say that you really need to have a separate and distinct strategic plan for what you want to achieve in terms of your international development. And all of the problems with domestic franchising are just tenfold more difficult on the international scale. I mean, you've got different laws, you've got trademark issues. There are franchisors that have gone out there and sold a franchise agreement for a country and didn't have the trademarks done, only to find out that somebody else had already squatted on them. I mean, there are myriad things that you need to address. It is not for the faint of heart, and a lot of companies will start and stop. They'll begin a big initiative in international franchising, and they'll abandon the whole thing because it is that difficult, but it can be extremely rewarding when it's done right.
Right. Well, again, thank you for being here today with me as always, and thanks for Nancy Weingartner, Executive Editor at Franchise Times, for taking time out of her busy schedule to be with us today. The team at Franchise Today is dedicated to franchise success at all levels. So whether you're a franchise professional looking to grow a concept, need some assistance in facing today's challenges, or would just like to better understand franchise best practices, then Franchise Today is certainly for you. Next week, Thursday, March 1st, at 11 a.m., we'll have Lonnie Helgerson talking about military and franchising and vet franchise. Then, my name is Paul Segreto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.